Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today we are going to talk about the major news that Navient has reached a, I don't know if you'd call it a multi-billion dollar settlement because it's $1.85 billion. So I guess technically not multiple billions, but it's a $1.85 billion settlement with about 40 state attorneys general from the Republican and Democratic side of the aisle. Major, major news about that. And the question is, could you get money from this settlement? So we're going to talk about that. That's going to be the main topic of today's show. But before I jump into it, I wanted to take a question from a listener. So remember, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail is the spot to go and record your own message if you want me to answer something on a show. So we're going to hear from Defrauded Grad Student.
Inspired by one of your newsletters, I realized that I may be eligible for loan forgiveness under borrower defense to repayment. To make a very long story short, my graduate school seems to have fraudulently falsified data to inflate its rankings, among many other things. The dean of the business school was recently convicted of felony fraud, and the school has now settled with the Department of Education and the Attorney General of my state. Knowing all this, I applied for borrower defense about a year and a half ago after reading one of your newsletters via email. There's been no movement on my application, and looking at the publicly disclosed borrower defense forgiveness data, it looks like those who applied recently are getting their applications processed sooner than those whose status remains pending. It also looks like those who applied online are able to track their application status versus those who applied by email like me. So my question is, should I apply again for borrower defense forgiveness online, or should I simply continue to wait? When I call the 1-855 number for the borrower defense, the agents suggest that I should not submit a duplicate application. So what trends are you seeing regarding borrower defense approvals and processing times? Would you recommend retaining a lawyer to potentially speed up this process, or would that be a waste of resources? Also, do you know of a student loan lawyer who specializes in this very unique field of borrower defense? And any other comments or suggestions on how to sort of make this process go a little bit more faster, make it more expedient for people like me? Thanks.
The question is, do you submit the duplicate application? I think there was a lot of great tips on borrower defense to repayment in that question. If anybody is interested in submitting a borrower defense to repayment application, I would definitely listen to that again and rewind on your podcast player. So borrower defense to repayment is essentially a way to get your loans forgiven if a school defrauded you. There is an application that you can actually fill out to try to say that, hey, my program defrauded me. I'd like to have my loans forgiven because of this program defrauding me. If you are not going to be going back for any additional degrees, you know, I see really no reason why you wouldn't at least try. The worst thing they can say is no. Now, one thing that this person pointed out is one thing that we're finding is that online applications get processed much faster than paper applications. So with the labor shortage out there, with the transition of loan servicers out there, it makes a lot of sense that if at all possible, everything you do from a student loan perspective needs to be processed online unless there's a very good reason, such as the double consolidation loophole for Parent PLUS loans, to involve a paper application for some step of the process. So in terms of filing a duplicate application, I would probably say don't do that, but these paper applications can sort of sit in purgatory forever. So I would probably say if you have a problem where you are not getting a response to your application and you are no longer at a point where you feel like making a phone call could help anything, that's when I would involve your constituent services office from your representative or congressperson or senator. It's always a smart idea to involve the person who is closest to education policy that represents you. So, for example, I'm going to use my home state of North Carolina as an example. The ranking member of the Senate Education Committee, Richard Burr, is one of North Carolina's senators. Obviously, if you're on the Education Committee in the Senate, a letter from their office scares the servicer a lot more than, you know, a random member, although it still probably would be good enough to come from a random member. And you don't want to contact the legislative, like share your opinion on legislation, you know, section of their websites. That's a black hole. That's just a bunch of interns reading that all day anyway. There's actual professional caseworkers on the constituent services side of things that if you send a message in, they will literally reach out to you and try to resolve your problem. This is one of the ways that we suggest people reach out whenever there's a problem with their student loans that's just not fixable from the usual processes of escalating, of you know, trying to ask for a review manually of PSLF, those kind of things. It is a very intense request to do this, but I think it's reasonable in this case. So if you've been sitting, waiting around for a response on whether or not your loans are going to be processed, I would look up whoever the closest person is to education policy that represents you, or whoever is the most senior person or has the biggest incentive to maybe want to be reelected. Okay. I mean, it's reality that this people respond to incentives and politicians are no different, right? So when you contact, basically what you can do is just Google constituent services and then the name of the representative, and that website will pop up. And then you just file a case request and explain the situation. Hey, I applied 5 months ago. They still haven't gotten back to me with any updates. No one can give me an answer, which is why I'm contacting your office to see if you can help me out. And also, you can file a complaint with the CFPB as well. If you just type in student loan CFPB file complaint, you can look up that information and file a complaint, and that gets you a lot faster response to things. I would say for people out there, there probably will be more of these defrauded borrower type of forgiveness requests processed during the Biden administration, right? Which we know lasts at least until 2025, January. There's, again, no reason why you wouldn't try for this if you feel like your school misled you. I always think it's interesting because it's often these for-profit schools that have the borrower defense applications processed most frequently, but there's all kinds of misrepresentations and fraud happening out there among nonprofit programs and graduate schools. The difference is that they've just figured out how to game the system where being enrolled in income-based repayment is somehow success. Here's a little dirty secret of the student loan industry. There's something called consultants for schools. And what they do is manage default statistics to make sure that they hit the number they need to hit to stay eligible for federal financial aid. It's just big business, basically, where you go to a program that's kind of on the edge or could have problems, and you massage the statistics, you reach out to students in the right way to get them onto income-based programs, and it's just sort of all a big racket to just maximize getting access to federal student loans, which is sort of like the illicit drug, if you will, that's fueling the crisis. So we talked about PSLF waiver update last week, and there's a lot of good stuff happening there. We had really a ton of loan forgiveness processed recently, and that's a good thing. I'll say that it's kind of shocking to see stuff that we're seeing from clients. I mean, in some cases, stuff that we could not have ever anticipated is working out in our client's favor. I'll give you one example that we had recently with a Parent Plus borrower. She had her loans forgiven completely, and we were all looking at it and asking, you know, how? Basically, she did a consolidation, you know, of a previous consolidation, and they cumulatively counted the credit on the consolidation. So because she included one loan that was an FFEL loan from a long time ago, that bumped up the credit of the new consolidation loan, and then she consolidated the new consolidation loan. That credit all carried forward and had everything forgiven. So literally something that this doubled consolidation resulted in this person getting complete forgiveness when she wasn't anticipating it at all. And the reason she received it in the first place, they said Parent Plus loans didn't qualify, but then they changed the ruling and said, well, if at least one loan was included for your debt in the consolidation, then it'll count. And this person had one of those small loans from her own undergrad or grad program that was mixed in with the rest, and then it qualified her. So what a bizarre situation, right? I mean, this again is going to result in tons of inequality in the student loan system, because people that get access to help like our help are going to get a lot of forgiveness, and people that don't ever read any of our blog posts or listen into our podcast episodes are not going to get any relief. I mean, or they're maybe going to get relief, but it's only if you sort of reached out and look for it instead of having it just be given to you. If you think about, I guess, the federal system, though, this is pretty similar to the way the tax system works. So there's all these wonderful loopholes out there, and there's loopholes where if you set up a corporation in a certain way, that you can get up to $10 million, basically, when you sell a corporation that you don't have to pay taxes on. I've never heard of this loophole before until somebody pointed it out to me. And it's like, oh, wow, that's kind of like student loans, where, you know, there's all these loopholes out there. No one goes and tells you them. And then if you find someone who's an expert in the field that knows what they're doing, they make you aware of things that you just never thought about before. It's kind of messed up because a lot of people don't get it. And the people that do probably maybe don't need it as much as other people, but, you know, we're not here to fix the entire world because there's just too many problems to fix. My goal is just to get you unburdened from debt and growing wealth and thinking about how awesome your future is going to be. And then maybe you can pay it forward and help other people and tell your friends about the PS Left waiver and what you did to get forgiveness, right? You know, you're one of the most informed people listening to this of any of your friend group about student loans, if you think about it. And so when you tell somebody, hey, listen to the Student Loan Planner podcast or check out the website or, hey, here's what I did with getting my loan forgiveness plan set up right, or here's the interest rate I got or the cash bonus I got from refinancing, that's all stuff that helps people a ton. So thank you for what you do to kind of spread the word about opportunities like the PSLF waiver and a new program or new, you know, result or I guess lawsuit settlement announcement of the Navient lawsuit settlement. So let's talk about that. Could you get massive amounts of cancellation or a massive check in the mail from Navient for wrongdoing that they did not admit to, is what the lawsuit rules or lawsuit description says. What happened is basically people were steered into forbearance by customer service representatives on the phone who had the incentive to have those phone calls be short and not super long. And when you have an incentive like that, a lot of times they're managed according to something called average handle time, AHT. Really fun fact, I spent maybe 2-3 months or so, one of my first jobs rotating through a call center at a financial institution. It was really fascinating to see the incentives in call centers. And one of the key statistics that people were measured on was average handle time, which is like the average length of someone's phone call. And people that had really high average handle times could get fired, and people with very low average handle times could get promoted. They pulled that statistic away because they realized it was creating bad incentives where people would call back a whole bunch of times and be angry and have bad net promoter scores because they weren't getting their problems fixed. But then they had problems where, you know, one person in the department was, you know, had an average handle time of 30 minutes of phone call because she would just be so sweet and talk to people. But then that's essentially not processing very many requests. And then you have to hire way more people and it's a lot more expensive. So this is sort of the universal problem that call centers deal with. And Navient, as a for-profit company with very narrow margins in student loan servicing, was probably reacting to those incentives that existed in the federal contract where they get paid this flat fee and now they have to figure out to make a decent profit for shareholders. How do you minimize costs? So having short phone calls is a big way of doing that. Now, the income-based repayment programs are a little bit easier than they used to be, but they're still very confusing. You still have a lot of conversation that has to happen to explain that to someone. And putting somebody into a forbearance takes 30 seconds. Putting somebody into income-based repayment might take 5 to 10 minutes. So if you're getting judged according to how long your phone calls are or potentially promoted based on how short your phone calls are, that creates a huge conflict of interest. And sure enough, that happened. People got put into forbearance because they called up and said, I'm having a hard time making my payments, or I'm having a difficult time economically, what can I do? Or a lot of times people were put into forbearance when they actually didn't even say anything like that. They just said that they got a notification they needed to update their income and they called, and instead of having to go through updating their income or changing their plan or something like that, they just got put into forbearance anyway. So all of those kind of issues were one of the reasons they settled the lawsuit, because of all the economic damages that caused people pursuing PSLF. Think about if you're a physician and you were put into forbearance because somebody convinced you that was better and you had 4 years of residency you could have been making $300 a month payments on, that instead caused you don't make payments because you stayed in forbearance or deferment, and now you have to make $3,000 a month payments as an attending to make up for that because your income's a lot higher. So that's, you know, tens of thousands of damages in this particular case that somebody could have sustained from this, what some people call forbearance steering. It's a real issue. Now, another thing that the lawsuit talks about is private student debt that Navient issued. Technically, this debt actually wasn't even issued by Navient. It was issued by Sallie Mae. That's kind of like potato, potato, because Sallie Mae sort of spun off Navient and created Navient in this sort of corporate transaction that happened around 2010, I believe. So a lot of that private debt, when it was spun off, got retained by Navient. And you kind of wonder, I mean, I'm not saying anything factual here. This is just me wondering out loud or speculating. I wonder if that's kind of one of the reasons that Sallie Mae spun off Navient in the first place, is student loan servicing is clearly a very bad job that no one wants. And a lot of these private student loans clearly had a bunch of legal and headline risk associated with them. And so I kind of wonder, you know, if that was part of the strategy, was like spin off this company and take a lot of the bad debt with it. I don't know. But anyways, Navient somehow owned all this bad private student loans. And specifically, again, here they were responding to incentives. So Navient basically said they had this rule, and technically it was Sallie Mae at the time, right? Basically, there was this rule called the 90-10 rule, where a shady private school needed to have no more than 90% of its funds come from federal student loans in order to stay open. That meant that 10% could come from private student loans. Now, under the FEL program, the FFEL loan program, lenders actually got to keep the interest income, and that money was guaranteed against loss by the federal government. So that FFEL interest rate of 6.8%, if you borrow $100,000, your lender is getting $6,800 a year. If you are having your loans serviced by Navient, they might get $50 to $100 a year. So that's an order of magnitude difference. Now, if you can get 90% of that FFEL loan, then the 10% private loan, you would be willing to sustain losses of maybe as much as 50% on those private student loans because you're making so much money on the federal debt that's issued that you get the interest income on. At the time, you know, Navient / Sallie Mae, whatever did, is they sort of looked at it, or, you know, I'm not going to say these corporations because I guess they're kind of different corporations now, but whoever was making these decisions, I think, looked at this situation of, you know, for-profit schools and said, okay, this is a business opportunity. We can make small private loans, which qualify under the regulations to issue the federal debt. Then we can issue the federal debt, and then we get the interest income on both, and we can sustain plenty of losses in the private student loans. The problem is the Attorney General's lawsuit found that to be predatory lending, right? Where you're kind of intentionally trying to get somebody into debt because of the interest income you can earn versus somebody who maybe is more looking for their own benefit of getting the cheapest debt possible. Don't get me wrong, I don't necessarily have any love lost for student loan servicing companies, but I do think it's a little hypocritical for the attorneys general in this situation to sort of say, hey, look, Navient's a predatory lender, where we don't look at like federal student loans and the fact that they're never repaid as also kind of a screwed up system where schools are just taking advantage of the whole situation as well. The difference is federal student loans, you can put them on income-based programs where even if somebody's paying $0 a month, it's not destroying their finances, it's not destroying their credit score, it doesn't even require a payment. Whereas a private student loan doesn't have those options, it does require a payment. So what was happening is these people were being put into these shoddy programs or shady programs and graduating with useless degrees with suddenly lots of debt that they took out that was not payable, or at least would require a massive pain, you know, economically to pay back, and they weren't getting relief because there's no income-based repayment for private student loans. So that was messing up people's credit scores, preventing people from buying a house, preventing people from maybe even buying a car with a loan that's not prohibitively high interest rates. That was clearly wrong. And I think that it's just, there's a lot of nuance with this kind of stuff. So that's basically what the Navient settlement is. On a big scale, it's two things. It's they pushed people to forbearance they shouldn't have done, and they issued private student loans for shady for-profit companies for profit, and they shouldn't have done that. So those are the two big parts of the Navient settlement. So what relief did borrowers get? Borrowers, if you were steered into forbearance, then you're getting about $260. Can't make this up, folks. $260. The checks are going to go out by the summer of 2022. To get a check, you go into studentaid.gov and you just make sure that your address is updated correctly to what it is currently. So studentaid.gov, log in, double check your profile for your address, and also do the same at your servicer's website and just make sure that your address is accurate. And 350,000 people, you know, that's only about 5% of Navient's total customers, but it's, you know, obviously a much higher percent of people whose loans were around in the 2010 sort of range, right? So it's like a dependent probability, right? So if your loans have been around for 10 years, then you have a higher chance than 5% of qualifying. But if you were steered into forbearance at Navient, go verify your address, and you will probably get a check for $260 approximately sometime later this year. Now, that's kind of laughable because it's really not much money at all. It's sort of like, didn't Facebook get sued once and there was some class action and we were entitled to $15 if you go to this address and request the check or something like that? I mean, it's sort of like, $260 is nice, I guess, but big whoop, right? Like, that's not coming close to accounting for the damage of being put into a forbearance, but it is what it is. Now, people that have private student loans with Navient are going to get slightly more of a benefit, but 95% of people are not going to get any benefit from this because the settlement only addresses people whose loans were in default before 2010. Private student loans that are still in default, that's not going to apply to the vast majority of people listening to this. So, for example, if your loans were in default in 2021 from a program from a for-profit school and your debt was issued by Sallie Mae before 2010, then there's a good chance that you're going to get notified that debt's going to be canceled. And that's great, but somebody reached out to us recently and was like, hey, my debt is, I was in default on it and I got out of default and I just refinanced my loans. Did I just screw myself out of getting my loans canceled? And we said, no, because this settlement is really only addressing people whose loans were currently in default that had them taken out before 2010 for these for-profit programs. So perversely, if this person had stayed in default the entire time and never paid anything, then this person would have had the loans canceled. If they had actively destroyed their credit and never made a payment, then that would have been, with the benefit of hindsight, the responsible thing to do. This kind of stuff is, again, I would argue it's not that big of a deal. $1.8 billion sounds like a lot, but it's only the subprime debt, which means that this debt, having been around for a long time and probably receiving very few payments on it, this debt was probably trading at pennies on the dollar. So it's $1.7 billion, I think, is the actual number of the private debt that's going to be canceled. But this $1.7 billion might have been trading at $200 million or $250 million or something like that. So in other words, it's not high-quality debt. It's low-quality debt, which was not already trading at par value. What is interesting about this to me is it shows the kind of legal remedies that politicians like to get for student loan borrowers. Is it something? Sure. Is it better than nothing? Absolutely. Is it really that meaningful? No, not to many people. Some people it'll help, but $260 as a penalty for forbearance steering doesn't really help anybody. Cancellation of private student debt for defaulted borrowers that went to shady for-profit schools, that's certainly helpful. But again, it's not going to help that many people. It's going to help people in specific situations. It sounds awesome. I'll tell you this. What's interesting is we're getting a lot of traffic on our site of a lot of people that are trying to figure out if they qualify for this. Because you hear an Navient settlement, you think, oh my gosh, they screwed me over so much. How can I go get benefit from that? The bad news is I have to tell you is this. The most you're going to get is canceled private student loans, but you're not going to get that if the loans weren't already in default. And you're not going to get that if you had loans since 2010. Like if the loans, because the settlement requires loans to have been basically before 2010, just really not getting that much of a benefit there. So it's kind of like hoping that something's amazing and then finding out that it's not, which is really how a lot of stuff with student loans happens. Now let's talk about the damage done to borrowers from the Navient settlement. So you might say, wait a second, what is he saying there? How are borrowers damaged by suing Navient? That doesn't make any sense. This is really fascinating. So Navient's a public company. You can read their disclosures and their public reports and things like that. So student loan servicing represents about 6% of their income. We have, as a business, decided to do things and not do things because of how much they represent as a percent of our total income. Certainly, there's been situations where we have a product line that represents, 5% of our income, that if it becomes too annoying from a regulatory perspective or a legal risk perspective or just how much time it takes out of my day, we'll close that down and not be sad about losing out on that 5% of our revenue. because it doesn't make sense for us to worry about it. So think about if you're a dentist and there's a procedure that represents 5% of your revenue. And let's say that it's very high risk. I mean, I'm not a dentist. I'm going to sound really stupid when I say this, but I'm going to pretend something that requires you to put somebody asleep in the office completely with general anesthesia or something like that. Maybe that never happens. Say it's like that. And you're like, okay, well, I'll do a couple of these, you know, a year or a couple of these a month, and it'll give me a little bit of a boost in income. But worst case scenario, someone dies and I am sued for everything I owe down to the last penny. Is that worth it? No, you're probably going to say, you know, I'm just going to refer that out to a specialist. The interesting thing about that, it's a rational business decision. But maybe that also means that fewer people get served, fewer people get help, because there's fewer service providers and probably fewer service providers that can provide services for a particular price. So how does that relate to the Navient situation? Well, when 6% of your revenue is derived from student loan servicing, what's the other part derived from? Making private loans to schools that, you know, end up providing degrees of value instead of no value, providing student loan refinancing services, right? Also, the interest income from these FFEL loans that still exist. All these different things provide way more revenue than student loan servicing. So what does student loan servicing open you up to? Well, you're awarded the contract based on a low bid that you issued to the federal government. You, as a for-profit company, then have to get profit on top of that. Otherwise, you'll be fired and somebody will be brought in to replace you to run the company. So you're going to seek to get profit out of that contract. And because there's no incentives for performance, you're effectively doing it based on having as low cost as possible, which means investing less in quality people, investing, you know, less in opportunities where borrowers can contact you. And it's obviously a big issue. With the Navient incentive structure, what they did is they looked at student loan servicing, and then they started to get a lot of lawsuits. First, they got a lawsuit from the CFPB, then they had these lawsuits from the state attorney general. And in the lawsuit settlement, it requires them to do a whole bunch of stuff, of disclosures to people about PSLF and things like that. The business hat comes into play here, where they looked at that and they just said, you know what, that's just not worth it to us. Here you go. We're not going to do this anymore. And what's interesting is the leader of the current Office of Federal Student Aid is a very sharp person, ally of Senator Warren, certainly has no love lost for Navient. In fact, I think he might have been involved in some of the legal actions against them when he was heading the CFPB, I think. But he had to beg Navient to stick around until the end of 2022 and extending their contract when they told him they were not interested. And that's kind of really interesting, because this is a company that, you know, the Warren wing of the party despises. You obviously see that those attacks on Twitter on them. They're sort of the punching bag of a really screwed up student loan system that got created over time. They deserve blame. They're a company that certainly could have done way better for borrowers. But again, Maria, people reacting to incentives. And so when such a small percent of your income is coming from student loan servicing and there's so much legal risk to it, the logical conclusion is get out of it. And so that's what they did. They closed up shop. They're no longer doing student loan servicing. And they said, here you go. And the new company that's taking over student loan servicing from Navient is Aidvantage, which is a subsidiary of a group called Maximus. Now, Maximus has been the ones that have focused on helping with defaulted student loan borrowers. What's interesting is people who've had their loans transferred from Navient to Aidvantage so far have said that their website is way worse than Navient. They said that the experience they've had interacting with them so far is much, much worse than Navient. They wish that they could have Navient back in their life. That's how bad it was. Now, I'm not making that up. That's literally people that have told me that. So when you think about how this Navient lawsuit could have hurt borrowers, you got $260 a borrower, which really doesn't help that much, right, for people that were forbearance-steered. The $1.7 billion of canceled private student loans helps some people that certainly need it. So that's a real result. That's a real positive thing. But the consequence of this settlement and these lawsuits against Navient is that they are getting out of the market And now you have a new servicer that's stepped up under the amount that Congress is willing to pay for federal student loan servicing. That seems like initial indications are that they're going to be even worse. That's a problem that's going to cause a lot of angst for student loan borrowers. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope that this goes much better than anticipated, right? But it just shows the dangers of sort of using student loan servicers as the public enemy number one when it comes to student loan crisis, when it's way more complicated than that. We know that schools share a lot of the blame. The difference is schools have among the highest numbers of lobbyists, actually, of any industry in Washington, which is really stunning when you think about pharmaceutical companies and defense contractors. Universities are some of the highest recruiters of lobbyists that exist because they're making so much money on a deeply flawed, deeply messed up student loan system. I don't know. So that's some thoughts about the Navient settlement. I think that hopefully you maybe get a couple hundred dollars. I guess I should say hopefully you don't, because that means you were forbearance steered and had a lot more damages than any money they're going to give you. So I guess hopefully you don't benefit from this lawsuit settlement. And then hopefully also you don't benefit from the canceled private student debt, because hopefully you weren't in default and had your credit wrecked from this predatory lending that happened with these for-profit schools that these companies were lending money to. Those are a few things that have been happening lately on the landscape. I will say I'm a little shocked. Interest rates are still low as they are. I would expect those to continue to increase. The Federal Reserve is talking about tightening monetary policy aggressively in 2022 because of inflation. And just a quick economic thing, basically when inflation runs hot, the monetary authorities, the people that print money for the government, basically, they decide to get a little bit more strict with things. So they make it a little bit harder for people to get access to cheap money, and then that tends to tamp down inflation. So that's something that they're looking at doing. But the problem is when they do that, they raise interest rates. So they're probably going to raise interest rates, you know, a couple to a few times in 2022, and that could have some negative impacts on how good refinancing rates might be. So one place to check is studentloanplanner.com/refi. You're going to see a lot of different companies on there that, you know, we offer bonuses up to $1,000 or even more, depending on the amount you're refinancing. I would highly suggest checking your rates now, because often they come out strong in January and then they back off the demand a little bit in terms of the companies and how low they want to go on interest rates. So those are some things to think about. Getting a student loan plan is also something to think about during this time of the PSLF waiver, where we have a lot of natural experiments that we put out there on consolidations and such to see how the PSLF waiver is going to be applied in practice, because there's still a lot of question marks in terms of how confident can you be sitting on a lot of credit towards loan forgiveness to consolidate a bunch of direct loans. Does it actually work? So far, we've seen that, yes, it does. But those are the kind of things that we monitor to try to double check our own advice when we're giving it, to make sure that it's really good advice. Those are a few big, you know, hot off the presses stuff going on with student loans right now. We would obviously love to get questions that you've got. I'm sure you've got them. So go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and leave a question for the show. I'd love to answer some of your questions and your concerns. And I hope your 2022 is off to a good start. I hope that you are taking control of your financial situation, taking advantage of the pause in student loan payments that exists for maybe a few months more. We'll see. But, you know, obviously student loans at some point get turned on again. And that's why we wanted so many people to start investment accounts now, so that we could get those habits built into people's budgets, so that when student loans do start again, you're already on that mindset, on that train, so to speak, of building wealth and doing all the right things automatically every month, instead of having to make active decisions about things like when to invest and in what. So for those of you that bought the investment course, hopefully you're enjoying that. You can go to studentloanplannercourse.com too if you need to access any of those materials. Thank you everybody for listening. I'm Travis with Student Loan Planner. Have a wonderful week.